Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrod and Mary Jo Foley, episode 219, recorded July 28, 2011, The Gmail Man. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used gadgets, and Newegg.com, the place on the internet to shop for tech. Gazelle it today and receive a gift card from Newegg at newegg.com/trade. And by GoToAssist Express. If you provide technical support to clients, colleagues, friends, or family, do it easily and without being there in person with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all your Microsoft needs. That we've got a duo, dynamic duo, the Redmonians, with Mary Jo Foley from allthingsmicrosoft.com at ZDNet. Hi, Mary Jo. Great to have you back.
Hi. Thanks.
See, I can look over at you now. I can say hi, Mary Jo.
You can.
I can. I can look deep into your eyes. This is good. I like it. And and to my right, your left, Mr. Paul Thurrod of
hello.
Of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, Windows IT Pro, and the author of The Great Windows Phone Secrets, among others. Hey, Paul. You guys sweltering still, or did you guys, the East Coast, get cooled off a little bit?
It's a lot less hot. It's still, yeah.
It's not triple digits anymore, though.
No.
Oh, man. I don't know how you did that. Wow. So we're in our new studio. I think you might notice this looks slightly different.
Yeah, slightly.
It's a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do you like it?
I likened it to the Emperor's throne room in Star Wars. I love it.
I am now Dr. Evil. If I spin this around, this chair has aircraft aluminum on the back. So,
yeah. Actually, oh, jeez. It also reminds me of the game BioShock, if you ever played that.
It is,
you
know, a
that
little undersea. BioShock. Well, we're going for Captain Nemo. So you're right.
Go.
You hit,
okay.
Hit the nail on the head. It's exactly what it is. But we're still working. We, in the words of Google, this is a field trial. So if you if you're watching the show and you hear us going through all sorts of machinations in between shows and so forth, it's because we're still really working to get this all the details and all the kinks worked out. But so I appreciate your patience, folks at home. Well, we're going to get into 219, and we'll start with Mango, which is now final. Paul Thurrod.
That's what they say.
Ahead of schedule.
Although.
It's not true?
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah, you know, the controversy here for me was simply that, you know, I've been told all along that the schedule this year for Mango would map to the schedule last year for the first version of Windows 7. You know, that meaning that we would see a launch event roughly around the October timeframe. And, you know, for that to happen, that Mango would have to RTM by sometime in, you know, late August or September. So the July RTM was actually very surprising for me, mostly because, you know, I didn't get this information from Bob over in the corner, but, you know, from a friend of mine who works at Microsoft, you know.
Bob might have known better, actually.
Bob, you know, maybe I would have.
Should ask Bob.
Except that, you know, I saw something in the description that Microsoft had today about this release that made me wonder if, Or maybe think that this explains what the difference was, which was simply that Microsoft's part of Windows Phone Mango, Windows Phone 7.5, is done. But that's how they described it. They said our piece of it is done, but the piece that's contributed by the handset makers and by the wireless carriers is not done, and that's still to come, and that the RC version of the developer tools won't see the light of day until the end of August, which I'd also heard before, you know,
wait
mapping to what I thought was the release of the phone.
But they're shipping Mango in Japan, but developers won't get
no,
anything.
No, 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 no.
They're not.
They're not. So What they've done is they've completed Mango.
Okay.
They've given it now to their partners, but their partners have to contribute code to it too before it can ship on phones.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to happen over the next couple months.
What
so
does that mean? What kind of code do partners contribute? Is it just like having the AT&T My Phone app on there, or is it more than just that?
I think it's more than just that. I mean, obviously, in the past with Windows Phone, with Windows Mobile, these partners were responsible for low-level drivers, you know, and things of that nature. And I don't think it's that level of thing for the most part. But I do think it's going to be things like, hotspot, wireless hotspot. You know, the ability to share a connection.
Oh, that makes sense. Because everybody has a different rules on
that. And this is something that different carriers may or may not do. Obviously, they're going to want to charge extra for it. They're going to have all that stuff in there. So I think we're still looking at the same rough schedule going forward, which is that it would probably be October at the soonest before we see a real launch. And then devices will probably dribble in over time like they did last time as well.
But so what the thing in Japan is not is just they're showing a window. Oh, by the way, it's not Mango. It's Windows Phone 7.5.
7.5, yeah.
7.5.
Even though,
sort of.
Yeah, I know. Even though the software itself is actually Windows Phone 7.1.
Right. Can you believe this? Okay, this is just craziness, right? The operating system is Windows Phone OS 7.1. But the handsets are going to be called Windows Phone 7.5.
Just
to keep it really confusing.
The people who see 7.5 are the people in the stores, right, buying a phone. The people who see 7.1 are developers, people like you guys.
Yep.
So that's why.
Or if you have a problem with your phone, doesn't somebody say to you, what version are you running?
Oh.
And you think it's 7.5, but it's really 7.1.
But that's okay, because then people will translate in their head. They'll say, oh, you mean 7.1.
I'd like to quote Paul Thurrott on something he said this week when this
that
came
guy,
out.
I don't trust him.
Because Microsoft said to me, it's not an ideal pairing.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And Paul said, just like Merlot and fish.
Right. It's a fine peanut butter and tuna fish sandwich.
Fine pairing.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think there's some precedent to this, right? Windows 7 is, of course, Windows version 6.1.
Right.
Some people will argue that, this doesn't really matter. But I think the thing that bothers me about this is simply that they could have fixed it easily. Like Windows on the desktop where there's a compatibility issue where you could say, look, we didn't want to change all these internal things because, developers rely on those version numbers for code compatibility. But there is no backwards code compatibility on Windows Phone. This is a brand new system. So I don't know. Control H, global search and replace. No? Too simple? I mean, I just don't understand.
Saying Microsoft is challenged with its numbering system is, it's like saying Salvador Dali's paintings are a little odd. It's just, yes, of course. I mean, yes. Sure. But they always do this. They always are strange in their numbering. I think you're tilting at Windows.
Little bit of fun here. But as far as the Japan phones go, my understanding is that this phone, which I think is like Fujitsu, Toshiba, I believe the way they're billing it is that when it ships, it will be the first Windows phone to market. But they're not saying when that's going to be. Hmm. So possibly September or possibly later. I don't think they know. I don't think they know when they'll actually be able to release it. And it may not even be the first Windows phone to market, but I think they were trying to get a little bit of pre-release excitement there or whatever. So we shall see. I'd kind of like to see a launch this year where everyone got phones at the same time, unlike last year where they launched in Europe and then a few weeks later they launched in the U.S. I'd like to see something more along the lines of a single global launch.
Well, U.S. handsets won't look like the Japanese handsets, or will they?
That particular handset, I believe, is only going to be sold in Japan. But of course, the phones themselves are all going to look similar.
And Japan uses cell phones very differently. A lot of Japanese people, that's their computer. They don't have phones per se. I haven't seen a Japanese version of Windows Phone 7, but you say it's the same UI and everything. I wonder how well accepted.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
is.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Does it have a slide-out full keyboard for that type of thing?
Right. Does it have emojis?
It is waterproof.
It is waterproof.
Is it really?
It's waterproof, and it comes in pink and yellow,
okay,
too.
So there's some concession to the Japanese market, because I know they like to swim in color.
That's right, right. The, yeah. There are the cartoon characters are available for
manga.
Stickers.
Yeah. That's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Do you know how well Windows Phone has done in Japan? Is there any
I don't
any
know anything about
that?
Japan. I'm not even sure if it is available in Japan.
This might be the first.
Currently, I'm not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
We don't really know how well it's done here either.
That's
true. We do have a bit somewhere later in the notes. There's a U.S. smartphone market share thing from Nielsen.
Yeah.
And this actually isn't in the notes, but according to Nielsen, Windows Phone plus Windows Mobile, it's actually usage share, right? Not market share. I should have written it that way. According to them, Windows phones, which is Windows Phone plus Windows Mobile, is about 9%.
Wow, that's pretty big.
That's actually pretty good.
I'm surprised.
When you consider
that's huge.
Yeah, so iPhone is 28%. Windows Phone is about a third of that. And I think a lot of that is probably legacy Windows Mobile devices.
It's Windows, not Windows Phone 7. It's 6.5.
Not necessarily. I think it's all of it together. Yeah. But it's still not... It's still not horrible.
So this is usage, like they measure browsers and so forth, that kind of thing. Not how many.
Not
handsets.
Units sold, but actual. Right, they're looking at some kind of
traffic,
you know, Nielsen,
probably. Yeah.
Right.
So Android is 39%, up from 29% half a year ago.
Yeah. Yep.
39%. iOS 28%. RIM down from 27 to 20, and Windows 10%.
10% or almost 9%.
Almost 10%.
HP WebOS is 2%. Symbian is only 2%. Of course, we're not very big Symbian users here in the U.S.
Right.
One thing I would just say, I mean, I unfortunately the chart I had didn't come through in the email, but Apple went up 1 percentage point over the past year. Obviously, Google went up dramatically. But when you break down the Google handset vendors and you look at, you know, Microsoft, the total 9%, where does that fall? You know, they're actually above Samsung. And they're on Android, and they're within shouting distance of Motorola, which is 11%. And of course, the Motorola Droid line is very popular, and the Samsung Android phones are very popular. So, you know, Windows Phone as a whole is not—it's not horrible. Obviously, we need to get more people on the new system than the old, but it's not the complete lost cause that I think a lot of people.
No, 10%
believe it.
9% is very respectable. I mean, it's not like HP is going to fold their 10 at 2%. Maybe they are. I shouldn't say that. Maybe they are. So I want to talk a little bit. We're going to take a break. I want to talk a little bit about Bing. Boy, I've heard everybody should buy Bing from Apple to Rupert Murdoch to Google. So is Bing for sale? We'll find out. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley. Should we anoint Mary Jo Foley now officially as your co-host, Paul? Should we just make that official? Let's just make that official.
Well, we should ask her.
I would like to. Yes, I would like to ask you officially, okay. Mary Jo Foley, will you marry Paul and me?
Wow.
No.
Damn you, Leo.
Okay, maybe she wasn't ready, Paul. I'm sorry. I thought. I don't know.
Oh, God, I've been working toward this for so long.
How would you like
to
join us every co-host?
You
only have to marry us for 90 minutes every Thursday. How about that?
I think that's acceptable.
We'd love to have you, because Mary Jo is really such a great Microsoft observer. And as you know, Paul, how much I love enterprise computing, and she really knows enterprise computing.
I feel it's like that commercial where the guy with the peanut butter and the guy in the chocolate, you know, the things get
You've
mixed up.
You've got peanut butter in my chocolate.
You've got enterprise in my consumer podcast.
No, we need to cover it. In fact, we worked for a while with Mary Jo on doing an enterprise podcast, which she really wanted to do, and we dropped the ball on that because we just got so busy. But this can be the joint Windows Enterprise podcast. So just every once in a while throw
you
in
mean
something.
We could talk about System Center?
Right, let's not get crazy. Step away from the data center.
You know, if we do, though, I'm going to move this show over to the other room, other pillow, where I have a pillow. So it'll be okay. I'll have a very nice set.
We'll make Enterprise fun, Leo. We'll bring Sexy back to System Center.
Yikes. I'm sorry. Was it Sexy part of System Center?
Yes. You have it, obviously have the Sexy extension.
That was
extension.
Something I got lost on the way to the cloud.
If you only had that, you would know.
It was a management add-on pack of some kind.
I actually want to welcome a brand new advertiser to the show. in conjunction with our good friends at Gazelle. We've talked about Gazelle before. Gazelle is that great place where you can take your old and used gadgets and get them refreshed, refurbished by selling them for a very good price. And now we've got a very special partnership. If you go to Newegg.com, I've loved Newegg. We use Newegg almost exclusively to buy our PC stuff. All the stuff that we do. You can now trade in your electronics when you sell on Gazelle for a Newegg gift card. So they've had other gift cards before, Walmart and Amazon, but now you can get rid of that old GPS and get something brand new at Newegg. Many of us want the latest gadgets, the latest smartphones, the MP3 players, the laptops, the gaming consoles. And we know that audiences who will watch this show have more gadgets per person than any other audience in the world. But what happens to all those old gadgets? I wish I could take the camera around the corner here, because there's an area of the studio, a corner, where it's just boxes of old gadgets. Guess where they're going? Gazelle. You get a box, you go on Gazelle, and you tell it what you have. They've got 20 product categories, 200,000 items. They will tell you what it's worth, either cash for your used items or if it's like just non-functioning. They will responsibly recycle them. And now with Newegg.com, Gazelle gives the customers a fast and easy way to trade in the used electronics and get a Newegg gift card for the trade-in value. You know Newegg. They're the best online retailer. Their shopping experience, rapid delivery, customer service. In fact, I think their slogan is, if you know, you Newegg. Take it from a geek. 84,000 products, award-winning website, 1.9 million plus customer reviews, high photo. I actually read the customer reviews on Newegg before I buy. It's really great. So get all those used gadgets from your home, your office, the backs of your drawers, your closets, your basements, and then visit this site, newegg.com, newegg.com/trade, to see what your gadgets are worth. As Newegg says, take it from a geek. Me. newegg.com/trades. I'm gonna click the trade button. What are we gonna get rid of here? Let's think.
I just looked up my iPhone 3GS.
Yeah,
it's worth $155.
Wow, that's enough to get a new one almost. I'm gonna get.
That's enough to. I mean, get a few of those, and you have a PC.
What do you think my HP touchpad is worth?
Yikes!
Device fully functional. Yes. Overall condition perfect. I just took it out of the box once. Power adapter. Original battery, original cables. Let's calculate here. By the way, they have these great graphs that show how the values change. $300.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost worth it. I'll just add it to the box. You put together the box. They give you the mailing label so you don't have to pay for shipping. And their data, by the way, their data experts will remove the personal data on here. So it's really great. I now have two items in my box worth 600. Schmackers. Newegg.com/trade. We thank Gazelle and Newegg for their support of Windows Weekly. They know that our Windows Weekly viewers and listeners have a lot of stuff they want to trade in. That's for sure.
I got to remember that. Newegg.com/trade.
Yeah, easy. You use Newegg,
close
right?
The window.
You use Newegg. I do. I mean, I always buy stuff at Newegg. I love Newegg.
I have a whole pile of stuff right here. I could do it. I could do this during the podcast.
I know. You might as well. I'm playing Sudoku. No, I'm just kidding. So did Microsoft sell Bing? Why did this get... First of all, Bing's not on the market, is it?
No.
No. And
no.
And it started... okay, let's be honest. In their quarterly earnings call, they're still losing money online, right? It's expensive.
Yeah.
Is that what started it?
Because all of a sudden... In other words... But the future of computing is in the cloud, right? Yeah. Mobile, connected, all that stuff.
So why get rid of Bing?
You have to invest in that.
Right.
So it's amazing how much play this has gotten.
It is. And the oversimplified way that everybody's looking at it is, okay, just separate the online systems division from the rest of Microsoft, sell it, and boom, everything's great. Except the people who are saying this don't realize how much Microsoft's already integrated Bing into everything. I mean, look at Windows Phone, right? It's thoroughly integrated into that platform.
Yep.
They can't just cut it off and toss it off to the side.
So this started with two writers for Reuters who cited a $2.6 billion loss in Microsoft's online division last year. And that's a big loss.
In a year.
In a year.
But Microsoft is a company that can swallow that kind of loss because it's not a pure loss. It's an investment. You know, that's like saying I took a $20,000 loss in my car last year. Well, right. You know, you're paying for it. I mean, it's, you know, this is something you're going to have for a while. I think that, you know, you can make different arguments for different products and technologies or whatever, but it's not so much that an online service that, I'm sorry, a search engine is integral to Microsoft's future, but that's not just what Bing is, right? This is a much bigger thing than that, and it is really integrated into everything. Well, a lot of things are doing. It's going to be part of Xbox. It's part of Windows. It's part of Windows Phone, like Mary Jo said. I mean, mm-hmm. This is, it's a big part of the future of the company.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Bing fails, whatever, maybe Microsoft fails. I think it is really one of those bet the company type bits.
How long can they continue to lose? First of all, we don't know that Bing was the whole $2.6 billion. I mean, they didn't break that down.
Right. By the way, a lot of that is, you know, they're investing in infrastructure for data centers, for Office 365, and for Windows Azure, and for the other Azure products. I mean, Microsoft is making a concentrated migration to the cloud. A lot of it is that kind of stuff.
Right. Yep. Not Bing.
And online advertising, too, right? I mean, okay. Online advertising is in that division,
yep.
So.
Yep.
All
right.
So we don't
There's
really
some evidence, know. Too. Yep. Actually, right. I was, you know, online advertising is interesting because Microsoft, I think we talked about this last week, you know, they have a pretty decent share of the search market, close to 30% in the United States, right? But including Yahoo?
No. Well,
including Yahoo.
Yeah, with Yahoo.
And I think it was 27%. They don't really generate what they should ad-wise. It seems like there's something wrong with the, I don't know if it's the advertising technology, maybe they don't get the same prices that Google gets, whatever it is, but I think that that's a bit of it as well.
And it makes sense. You know, it's saying, it would be like saying to Amazon 10 years ago, you know, you should really sell that book division because it's costing a lot of money to go bubbles.
Yes. Or to Netflix, you know, you're really going to start shipping DVDs around? Yeah. That's, you know, electronic is the
future.
That's
expensive, yeah. That could cost you a lot of money. They're in a building period. They're building their online presence. That makes perfect sense. Although,
is there a fire in your neighborhood? Is that what I hear?
Mary Jo.
Yes, that's my neighborhood.
Oh, is that your neighborhood? Manhattan. She's in Manhattan. You know, what we've got to do this setup is we've got to start broadcasting in stereo so you can hear that, there's a fire engine on the right. That must be Mary Jo. We have to do that from now on.
It's like the early Van Halen albums where the guitar would always be on one side and the rest of the band would be on the other.
And Eddie off in the corner. Yeah. And then David Lee Roth, he's way in the back because they didn't want to talk to him. Yeah. Let us move on to our third item of the day. Survey says IE9 is the best browser for business. What a shock. What a shock. Did Richard Dawson?
Yeah, so what? I'm curious about Mary Jo's take on the Microsoft-sponsored study thing, because obviously there's some... Well, for some reason, this is controversial.
First of all, if it said Chrome, you think Microsoft would be happy?
Well, but that's what I'm... So here's the thing. Having actually done a study for Microsoft, I can tell you that they were only interested in the truth. And yes, it's probably true that if Microsoft sponsored a study about something and they didn't get the results they wanted, wouldn't see it.
Promoting
it. Probably wouldn't see it. Yeah. That's probably true. But that's the point, right? I mean, I'm not saying that this is true. In fact, I look at this particular study, which involves the economic impact of IE9, and I think, well, some of these numbers I don't quite understand where they come from. But I'm just curious. You know, you've obviously, you've seen a lot of this kind of thing. I mean, what do you think of this?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've kind of stopped covering sponsored studies because <There you go. laughs> because no matter what happens, no matter even if the results came back and said, you know, IE9's best for these 8 things, but these 2 things not so much, you're still going to get people saying, I just don't believe it. It's a Microsoft sponsored study. It's invalid.
Yep.
So I've just kind of made it a policy to stop covering those. Yeah. And I to your point, I agree. They, you know, they can't really influence the results on these, but they can influence the way they're presented.
Yep.
So
yes. Yep, that's true.
So I stay away from them.
So apparently Mozilla recently said we don't really want enterprise customers.
I know.
So
that went over really well, by the way. I thought that was a brilliant little bit of marketing on their part.
That's what happens when you're a nonprofit, right? And it's Asa Dotzler, who has attacked you, as I remember, in the past.
He should be more outspoken. He's a quiet, he's very, quiet man.
He has his opinions, shall we say.
I actually like Asa Dotzler quite a bit. I think he's a smart
guy. I do, too,
guy,
and I'm glad he exists. But he says, Enterprise, and I'll quote, Enterprise has never been, and I'll argue, shouldn't be a focus of ours until we run out of people who don't have sysadmins and enterprise deployment teams looking out for them. I can't imagine why we'd focus at all on those kinds of environments.
Although then they did come back and create an enterprise customer council after the whole brouhaha about this hit.
I wonder if he's on that council.
Somehow
he's the guy in the dunking tank there.
and that's kind of the point of Mozilla is an open source project, and you know when you have open source projects, you have a lot of people involved, and many of them have voices, but they don't all agree. And anybody who's ever worked on an open source project knows there's a lot of battling over the heart and soul. Nevertheless, Microsoft's IE group must have been very happy when they heard that, because obviously IE9 is aimed at business, right? I mean,
I think the point here, though, is that they're looking at very big businesses, right? These are customers with 50,000 desktops, and so they're trying to come up with some kind of a savings feature. And as I went through this, I read the study, and I thought, well, I don't quite get where's the money savings occurring here, because obviously there are costs involved. Microsoft is trying to say, look, when you're migrating to Windows 7, you should migrate to IE9 as part of that. And that there's some justification for IE9 being a way to set you up for the future, right? We know that Microsoft is doing a lot around HTML5 and web standards and all that stuff, and I think there's some importance to that. But it's hard to quantify what the savings are to that bit of it, right? You know, if you just switch to like a web-compliant browser, you'll save, you know, X amount of dollars. It's kind of a tough thing to say. So they had some information about, the security benefits, the reduction in help desk calls, and so forth. But then I think those you can make some guesstimates about savings, and then it obviously gets fuzzier once you get outside of that stuff. But
new peripherals for the
Moving right along.
Moving right along. Well, it's I'm kind of with Mary Jo. It's like, you know, industry-sponsored study. Well, okay, fine. Of course it's going to say that. But I think you can make a strong case without the study that IE9 is for deployment reasons and a lot of other reasons, policy edit and stuff, is the right choice for enterprise. Mary Jo, what do you think? I mean, do enterprises use Mozilla for their intranets? Do they design everything for IE9? IE9 must have a lot of penetration. Why even put another browser in your build, right?
Well, I think there's a few reasons.
Unless
you're
Google.
Unless you're Google, right. Yeah. But, one time I'd actually like to hear from other listeners and viewers if they have problems with IE9 on Windows 7. Because I've talked to Ed Bott about this a little bit. Ed, I don't run IE9 on Windows 7 anymore as my browser because it's so slow.
A couple of people in the chat room say yes.
Yes.
It's not ideal.
And, it's supposed to be the fastest browser, especially on Windows 7. And I'm sure it's something else I have installed on my PC that's conflicting with it.
Right.
But for me, it's so slow, it's not usable. And I've switched to Chrome because of that.
Right. I love Chrome. I use Chrome all the time. Some people say IE9 starts up faster, but a lot of people say it runs slower.
I think that it's kind of a toss up from performance wise between these browsers. The bigger issue for me is just the little things that get in the way, and when enough of them happen, you stop using it.
I think we lost Paul. I noticed he had frozen. So
He's not frozen on our end here for whatever reason.
Oh,
but he's frozen on the screen, so that's why I don't know what's happening.
Okay, can you still hear me?
Yeah,
it's a TV.
I can.
I don't know what's happening.
How? That's so weird that he'd be frozen on the screen and not frozen.
Totally
in,
fine here
in real life.
Okay, so can Leo still hear me?
Oh yeah, you sound fine. I just actually, it's a nice shot of you. It's very flattering. So I'm just going to stare at it, and you may continue speaking. We'll just
what I was saying was that there are little things in IE9 that get in the way. So, for example, you can very easily you select some text, you copy it to the clipboard, and when you paste it inside of Chrome, which I do a lot for my articles when I post them, I have to cut and paste the entire article, paste it into a web form on my company's website. I can very easily paste as text in Chrome, which you can't do in IE9. There's a way to do it, but it's not easy. It's not a simple little keyboard fast control. The other one is spell checking. You know, there's no spell checking built into IE9, which kind of drives me crazy. You have the ability to do web app pinning, but the apps that you pin in IE9 have more window Chrome, so they're not as useful on a low-resolution screen. So you hit enough of those after a while, and it's like, well, you know, to me, it's not so much the performance, it's like the little things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's more just when I open a tab, it takes forever for the site to come up. And it just really makes it unwieldy. I just don't go to it as my go-to browser because it takes forever to open.
Do you use the 64-bit version or do you use the 32-bit version?
No, you.
I have 64-bit Windows 7, but I'm using 32-bit.
Yeah, everyone uses 32-bit.
You know, I think a lot of the problem with IE9 is just its heredity. It's like it's got the word IE in it, and people think back to 5, 5, and 6. Seriously. And I think that, you know, ever since IE7, it's been much more secure, much more reliable. It's been a modern browser. But there's all this, you know, in your head, the back of your head. Oh, yeah, I remember IE6. Oh, I remember IE5.5. And Microsoft doesn't help much by having big websites saying, get off of IE5. It just reminds you how bad it was, right? So I think some of it's just a branding. You know what they should call it? IE7.5. No, I don't know.
The rendering engine could be IE7.1.
Yeah, they should just change the name. Call it Bob. No, that's bad. Moving along.
Call it Trident. They have Trident. A cool code name.
Is that the code name, Trident?
Yeah. It was their code name for the rendering engine. Yeah.
I think that's not a good
still
name.
Because right?
It just sounds like a three-pronged fork that might poke you in the butt. I don't know
stick
why.
Stick you?
Yeah, stick you. I don't know why. We need come on. We should have a contest.
It's that too.
A new name for IE. Let's forget Internet. Even the name Internet Explorer.
You have to draw all your product names.
Well, maybe that's the truth. Yep. But doesn't Internet Explorer sound dated? I'm going to explore the Internet.
I don't like it because I stumble over it. It's when I say it, like it's Internet. You know, I have a hard time just saying Internet.
Internet.
Because it's followed by Explorer, so you know this is coming. So it's like Internet Explorer. All right. You know, you kind of blurt it out and you drop a little bit of it.
Yeah. I think Chrome, like, is a great name. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's
short,
simple.
To the point. Yeah. No, it makes no sense at all.
Doesn't have to.
In fact, it's ironic in some ways because Chrome, of course, is about the minimization of window Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we call it Shiny Happy Browser?
Trident.
Trident's okay, but Shiny Happy Browser. I'm not kidding. There's a psychology, and I think Internet Explorer has a bad name. And if you just, it's time to call it Shiny Happy, people would like it. Oh, I want to try the Shiny Happy browser. You could call it Sleep Near.
I like Kumo. Remember,
Kumo.
They bought the name Kumo, and they almost used that instead of Bing, right?
Yeah.
Kumo is Japanese for spider, is that right?
Oh, see?
Oh, that sounds
scary.
Right.
Yeah. So,
well, it could be a fuzzy fun spider. It's all in the logo.
This is, by the way, the problem is with an international corporation and branding now is impossible.
Yes.
It's almost as if you go, well, we don't like... I'm sure somebody at Microsoft says, well, we're not crazy about IE and Internet Explorer as a name, but what are you going to do that's better? And we can trademark in 700 countries and in 15 languages.
Yep.
It's just hard. So let's move along. I've always, you know, I think what's always been missing from the Xbox 360 experience is the chance to look like one of those Bluetooth earpiece wearing dorks while you're playing a game. Fortunately.
Well, actually, so that chance does exist. But the problem is the one they have today is white and it's a little bulky. So last year, probably about a year ago now.
Oh, Lord.
I think I was in New York for a Microsoft event. Actually, it might have been, I don't remember when it was. It doesn't matter. But the Zune guys were showing off the Zune integration bits that they put into the Xbox last fall. And I said, you know what you need is a way to navigate this Zune interface using a remote control. Now, the Xbox does have a media remote control today. It's like a media center type remote control.
Right.
But I said it should be styled like these new Xboxes, right? Because the new ones are beautiful looking. They're black and shiny and it's been a year, but it will be coming out this fall.
Shiny and, piano black it remote. Like. It's pretty.
Yeah. Nice.
So this is for people using it as a media center more than a gaming device.
Well, except so the media center is a bit of a tough term because Xbox 360 does have that interface, the media center interface, right? Media center extender, they call it. But what's missing on that remote, by the way, is the green button. The media center button is missing.
Oh, you're right.
And a lot of people see that and they think, oh, that's, what does that mean? You know,
there.
Now there's a live TV button, but of course we know live TV is coming. There's a guide button, and that would be part of the live TV stuff, I'm sure. I mean, this may, in fact, represent our first real clue that they are moving away from Media Center for television or video-type content in the living room.
Interesting.
So there's a little bit of a, you know, it's not definite, but there is a little bit of evidence there that maybe that is the direction they're going in.
So there's the remote, but then there's also this Bluetooth earpiece.
Yeah.
$60
because you know when you're screaming profanities at people, it's important to do it in the most efficient wireless fashion.
Well, I guess it doesn't really. I mean, what are the other choices? There are headphone. Looks like headphones with a boom on it.
Well, they have wired headsets that plug into the hand.
I have
controller.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, and those things they're cheap and they break easily.
Yep.
Of course, when you're throwing your controller at the wall, you usually rip the wire up by mistake.
Right.
You know, there's all that. So this solves that problem, I guess.
But you look like such a, you know, Michael Douglas in Wall Street. You are.
Well, it's, but it's you're in training to be that kind of douchey guy walking down the street with his Bluetooth.
I guess these will do. I guess these will do well. Now the remote is cheap. It's $20. Good price.
Yeah.
$60 for the headset.
The headset is $60.
Yeah. A little pricey.
I think that's what they have one today. I think it does cost $60.
Oh, they have one. Somebody else, a third party makes
white.
It?
You know, it's
just white.
No, Microsoft actually makes one. It actually goes over the back of the ear. It's kind of an awkward looking design. Okay. Lots of bad reviews, bad reception, doesn't work well. So,
I wonder if they're going to be doing a whole line of headsets for Skype now that they're getting Skype, you know?
Oh, they should.
Yeah.
They should. Skype
could be
you know,
a whole
has
new
a,
line.
There is a Skype store on the Skype site where they sell, you know, Skype compatible hardware. I don't know if some of that's Skype branded or not, but boy, that is an opportunity for Microsoft. Absolutely. Let me go to the Skype accessories page here. See, they sell all this stuff: Skype at home, Skype at work, Skype anywhere, headsets, and all this stuff. But I don't know if any of this stuff is. Logitech and FreeTalk. That's a funny camera. Look, it's a little person. Why would you buy that?
Nice.
It's just strange. It's a little.
You really take your job seriously, don't you, Bob? You know, you're
going... You know, if you were the.
We'll see Channel 9 guy.
Yeah,
Channel
it does.
Channel 9 guy camera for Skype.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, but these are all opportunities. This is kind of.
What am I?
You're a big camera head. That's what you are. This is pretty funny. I like this. They sell a lot of stuff right now, but none of it is Skype branded. Microsoft could easily jump in here. Let's see what I didn't realize Skype pushes their work stuff as well. All Logitech and FreeTalk. Oh, there's Creative. So, yeah, these are other people.
There's not a little guy wearing a suit.
Wouldn't that be funny? I like that little guy.
Same
like
little
that.
Guy, but he's got a three-piece suit on.
Here's the Skype for TV, FreeTalk, Panasonic, and Sony. Yeah, huge opportunity for Microsoft. And I presume that once they own Skype, that all of these partnerships are maintained. Look, I mean, if Panasonic puts Skype in a television, that's going to be there for a long time to come. Skype-enabled Blu-ray players. Look at that. Sony. Some big partnerships here for Microsoft. And you can't screw with Sony and Panasonic. You can't mess with them. All right, moving right along. Sure we are. Next, Microsoft. I don't know why this isn't this. I don't think Mary Jo wrote this. Linux turns 20 years old today. Happy birthday, Linux. It was in 1991 that Finnish graduate student and longtime seasonal affects disorder syndrome sufferer Linus Linux Torvalds, suffering through a long Finnish winter, said, oh, I think I'll write an operating system. And Linux was born 20 years ago today.
I thought it was going to be the future, right?
When did you think
I really
that?
Thought they were onto something.
I think
1991.
No,
I didn't. Mid-90s. I saw this as a very big danger because at the time, the notion was, if they could just do what Windows does and have it be free, I mean, how do you fight that?
Right.
You know, that was my thinking at the
time. I'll be honest with you. I think Linux on the desktop future is getting brighter as Apple becomes more big brother and Microsoft just kind of putters along. Pardon me, present company accepted.
So Linux arguably is already winning because it's
in every website. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you look at the way the future has changed, you know, Microsoft basically vanquished both Linux and Mac OS X on the desktop. And now, ironically or whatever, they're getting destroyed by them in the mobile world.
Isn't that funny? Android is Linux.
It's interesting. It's the same players essentially.
Yeah. And suing everybody. He's suing each other.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Vanquished everywhere except in court.
In court.
Well, so they're not suing everyone. I mean, sometimes they settle and then they have a licensing agreement.
Right.
So, that's probably what's going to happen.
And then also, there's also some interesting partnerships, right? Microsoft just renewed its unholy alliance or whatever with SUSE, the former Novell.
They're going to invest $100 million in SUSE.
They're buying Linux support licenses or something. Again, I don't even understand. All I can imagine is that they're like spooled on toilet paper rolls in the bathrooms at Microsoft.
Have another one.
I don't even.
You know what this is? This is all about indemnifying customers, is what this is.
It is. Right.
So explain what that means. I just said it. I didn't know what it means. But what does it really mean, Mary Jo?
Well,
it means the customers who get the certificates from Microsoft for SUSE are guaranteed that Microsoft won't sue them. Basically.
Wait a
That's
minute.
What it means, pretty much.
So essentially,
Leo, you can put that in the bank.
So essentially, they're giving SUSE $100 million, and then, in effect, they're selling this. It would be a terrible thing if your business was to burn in a terrible fire. They're selling this insurance to customers who buy Microsoft Enterprise. What Microsoft products do you buy to get this certificate? Any?
Right.
Well, what one case where a lot of people have bought them in the past is people who want to run Linux guests on Hyper-V. Right?
Okay. So you're running Linux on Microsoft.
You want to make sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You don't want Microsoft to turn around and go, hey, guess what? You're running Linux and we're going to sue you, even though you're running it on Microsoft.
Yeah, so this is...
I think it's a perfectly healthy relationship. I'm not sure what the complaining's about here. These guys all get along great.
You know, it would be a terrible thing
if you were to get sued
for using our product. So we will indemnify you if you purchase... But do you like give them money? I mean, what is the deal?
No. You know, if you go back to the original patent agreement between the two, because it was a patent agreement.
Right. It's all about software patents.
Cross-licensing. It was two ways, wasn't it? Cross-licensing?
It was. But really, what everyone got up in arms about 5 years ago was they felt like Novell was admitting that their patents, that they were infringing on Microsoft patents by signing the deal.
Right. They really upset the Linux community.
So, it did.
So you can.
It really
so
did.
You
and
can...
then it didn't help after that. With Steve Ballmer saying, you know, that this is proof that, you know, the Linux people have to abide by the legal rules. I mean, he really kind of threw salt in the wound there and didn't make for a happy relationship.
All this proves is that software patents are a crappy idea. And please, let's just get rid of that system. That's all that proves.
We're free to draw our own conclusions from this, but
that's my conclusion. I had gotten a big debate on Twitter. Boy, try having a debate on Twitter, by the way, over software patents.
Yeah.
And Nilay Patel was kind of saying, yes, it's a good thing. And another guy was saying, you know, I mean, and I was just saying, I don't see how you can ever say software patents are a good idea. I understand you want to protect people, but the burden on innovation at places, this is a perfect example where there's just, you know, it's just a bad idea. And it's all because of patents, software patents.
Yeah. I don't believe, and Mary Jo may know this to be true or not true, but I don't believe that the Microsoft patents in question have ever been challenged in court. No. I don't think that any of these have ever gone to
Nobody can
trial,
afford it.
I think.
You can't afford it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, and it's been really interesting. The one case that's super interesting to watch is Barnes & Noble versus Microsoft, because Microsoft is going after Barnes & Noble on the Nook, because the Nook has Linux at the kernel, right? So the Barnes & Noble guys, they've been very public about what Microsoft expected them to do. They said, Microsoft wouldn't even tell us which patents we were violating until we signed an NDA. And why should we sign an NDA?
They're suing us.
So the whole thing's crazy. Right, they're suing us.
we'll tell you what you're suing.
Isn't that a matter of public record?
It's not. And they don't want it to be a matter of public record.
No, it's not a matter of public record. Yeah. So everybody's saying, you know, Microsoft at one point a few years back said, Linux violates 235 of our patents.
But we won't tell you which one.
Which patents?
Not that Microsoft is all alone at this, because Apple gets payments from everybody. And now from HTC, I think HTC is going to settle with Apple over exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And so it's just...
It's a tough one because, well, we've talked about patent trolls. I mean... The problem is companies like Apple and Microsoft are not patent trolls. I mean, they really have
they're defending real patents.
A responsibility to defend patents for technologies they're actually using.
That's why they shouldn't be awarded patents.
It is a slightly different thing. Yeah,
it's the it's once you award the patent, then they have to defend it.
It's a chicken and the egg thing. You have to defend it. Exactly.
You have to defend it.
Or you lose it.
And so the whole thing is just a mess. And what you know who gets screwed is us, because all this ends up getting done is passed down to the end user. And so you pay more for everything because you're paying these license fees.
Someday I hope to get a box from Microsoft that contains whatever, but wrapped all around it as the packing material, I hope, are SUSE licenses.
Indemnification certificates.
Go ahead. Like wallpaper my room with it or something.
Use SUSE on Hyper-V. We won't sue you. Microsoft opens up Hotmail, Messenger, and SkyDrive to mobile developers. So do they have an API?
Yeah. I guess they've always had some form of API for Windows Live, but they updated it recently and are apparently going to update it over time with better examples, specifically for people who are writing mobile apps for Windows Phone and Android and iOS. The thing that I get from this is people have been waiting for a long time to see what Microsoft's going to do on the mobile device side with their services and also with really high-level projects like Office. And the hope is that they'll come up with their own clients and those things. But this makes me wonder if this means that Microsoft will never explicitly support SkyDrive on, you know, the iPhone, because they won't have to. You know, that other developers will just do that for them.
But I like that idea.
Yeah,
actually,
just speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's neat that it's opened up.
Always open it up, because then you'll get this great ecosystem going. And then you can sue them. So it's great. It's really nice. I'm joking.
Leo, it's like you finally get the Microsoft world. It took 5 years, but you're finally right there.
Yes, I figured it all out. It's a simple business strategy, but effective. Hey, no, we're just joking.
It's called coopetition.
We're just joking. We're just joking, kids. So we're going to take a break, come back with more. Mary Jo Foley is here, all about Microsoft.com. Our newest member of the Windows Weekly team, and I'm so thrilled to have her here on a regular basis now. If you go to allaboutmicrosoft.com, you can see a compilation of all of Mary Jo's articles for ZDNet. Many posts a day, so there's lots to read, and is a great insight into everything there is to know about what's going on, particularly at the enterprise level. We're going to talk about the Gmail man. In just a second, as a matter of fact, straight from Mary Jo's post of earlier today. But first, I'd like to talk about my friends at Citrix and GoToAssist Express. If you are in the business of supporting people, whether you're an IT person or a software professional who has, you know, clients who buy your programs, you know what a pain in the butt, what a pain in the tuchus software support can be, especially if you're doing it over the phone. The best way to do it, go online, remote support. There are lots of choices, I know, but there's only one that's cross-platform, 128-bit SSL, 24/7 support for you. It's called GoToAssist Express from Citrix. It's simply put the easiest way to view and solve your users' problems remotely. Very affordable. You can buy day passes or month-long passes. You can see and solve the problem. Even if your customers aren't there, they have unattended support. Run 8 sessions at once. which means you could start a fix, start a scan, move on, move on, move on. It's actually great. I use it with friends and family to teach them how to use new software to fix their problems. You could do it for training, absolutely. And it lets you take control of the problem and solve it the way you know best. You don't have to walk them through it. I want you to try it free for 30 days, absolutely free. All you have to do is go to assist.com/windows, G-O-T-O, assist.com/windows, and you'll get a free 30-day trial. Let me see. I'm just curious. I'm going to go to assist.com/windows. I wonder if they have Paul's picture. No. We got to get – this should Bastards. Be – that looks like Eileen. That looks – we should have Mary Jo there and Paul there. I'm going to Photoshop your head onto that. And that is the place to go. Go to assist.com/windows. You see how easy it is. Setup takes a couple of minutes, including the software install. That's true for your clients, too, which I think is really important. It's very simple for your clients to install and use. You just send them a link. They click it. They say allow so that the Java can run, and that's it, and you're in. Go to assist.com/windows. Try it today. I use it all the time, and I love it. Moving along, the G. What is the who is the Gmail man?
You gotta look at this. At least one of the videos. They are absolutely priceless.
They're videos. Oh, that's hysterical.
Yes,
there is.
Explain it to me
one
while
of
I
the
pull
videos
up.
I'm gonna
go to your site and get the video here. So explain what we're talking about.
You know, Microsoft every year has this thing called MGX, the Microsoft Global Exchange, and it's a big sales conference, like 12,000 Microsoft sales guys in an auditorium bellowing and drinking and whatever.
Oh, so fun.
They always show these funny videos.
So should we turn on the audio on this? Is this the one? Is this it?
Turn on the audio. Everywhere and nowhere at the same time. He
thinks at every subject in unreal time. Oh, whoa. Probing every sentence and all your punctuation. Got his nose in every colon in every situation. In every colon. Man. So basically the implication is that Google's reading your mail, which they are, I guess. It's not an actual Gmail mail.
And that they're using the keywords, blah, blah, blah.
No, I'm looking at everyone's mail.
How can you do that?
Well,
I love that.
Sometimes when a person really loves their Gmail very, very much, the two get together and an ad is born.
Ew. You can't do that, mailman.
Of course I can. I'm not a mailman. I'm the Gmail man.
I bet this got howls of laughter at the Microsoft conference.
I'm sure.
This ad should be on TV. This is priceless.
Good morning.
Yeah, go after him. Go after him.
Carolyn Johnson, get up off of that painful itching and burning of yours. Come check this out. A little relief there? Oh, it feels good, right?
No, what, have you been reading my mail?
No, just skimming. For certain keywords, burning and sensation, cat and dander. Good news is there's an ointment for 4 out of 4 of those brought to you by Pharmaceutico. Would you like a free 2-week trial?
No, actually I wouldn't, because I was actually writing about a lasagna. I was afraid of burning, and my husband said it was sensational. I have a cat named Dandy, but you know, it's really actually none of your business.
My business, your business, it's all business. It's the business of advertising, personalized for whatever you're Gmailing.
Isn't that kind of wrong?
Who cares?
Gmail man. Wow.
His favorite game is peekaboo, his favorite word, so what?
That's brilliant.
He smiles in your face when you stutter, but. His ads are unsolicited based on what you type. Makes you want to ditch Gmail and go Office 365. He's the Gmail man.
There's the pitch. So it is a little bit of FUD, that's what they're saying in the chat room. I mean, it's, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's true. It's not...
And that's what it's supposed to be.
Right. That's why they don't make an ad out of it. They show it at their conference, not in public.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's still always interesting
it's
to see what they're telling their salespeople to sell, right?
So that's who sees this is salespeople.
Yep.
It's the MGX for sales.
It is.
Yeah.
And I got to say, doesn't the Gmail man look a little like David Pogue?
Oh, jeez. Wow, you think that's on purpose? He kind of does.
I don't know.
he has David's kind of attitude. Wow.
He does.
I didn't read that into it. Well, might as well
that's
hit
just
it.
Just me reading.
Might as
into
well
it.
Strike out at everybody when you're making these videos. Wow. I love the Gmail man.
I think it's brilliant.
Paul and I have been calling for more hands-off fisticuffs between corporations for a long time.
Well, this is like the old Microsoft. You know, this is what I want. Yeah. Aggressive, in your face.
Yeah.
I don't see this as FUD at all. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is a Google does. I mean, no.
Yeah, but they don't. There's not a man. There's not a human. This is the big disconnect between this and the reality.
Leo. Obviously, there's not a man.
Well, that's what they're saying. There's a guy reading your email. There's a big difference between a guy reading your email and saying, "Hey, let me give you an ointment," than a computer system.
They are reading your email to generate ads.
There's
what they said was very okay.
It's a computer, Paul.
It's like Skynet has achieved
self-awareness. It's not a sentient computer. It sees keywords.
I don't actually think that it's accurate to say that. We don't know what Google is doing with our
mail. You're right. We don't know.
So,
but the presumption, that's true. It could be a man.
Microsoft is saying we're not reading a man.
Hey, Paul, it could be President Obama. Yes. We don't know doesn't mean it could be. So you're saying... I mean, Microsoft
we
could
do know
be
that
also.
Google is reading mail. Google as an entity is reading your email to generate ads. This is an absolute fact. I didn't say a human being, but it doesn't. They've programmed a
But there's no guarantee that Office 365 is somehow private.
Actually, there is a guarantee.
I think there is a guarantee.
What do they say?
That's what they're saying.
They say we can't read your mail.
We're not doing that.
They say we're not using any keywords in any of your mail to generate ads.
No, because you're paying for the service.
It's not a free service. Right. It's not free.
How about Hotmail?
It's not free.
You think they read your mail in Hotmail?
I don't know the answer, but I'm guessing the answer is no.
Do they have horrific context, the ads are on Hotmail?
Do they have context-sensitive ads in Hotmail?
No, they have tower ads in Hotmail.
They don't have any relationship to your email? And how do we know that?
Because all you have to do is
look at Hotmail.
Because it's so bad.
Let's go look at Hotmail.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's just one of the freakier things about Hotmail is looking at those ads. If you go to Gmail and actually look at an ad, I mean, it's bizarre what they come up with.
No, I know. Because they're matching words. But that's not necessarily... I mean, I don't... It's FUD. I'm not defending Google, but you get a free service, and you know what the deal is. They're going to match ads to words in your email. If you don't like that...
This is very reminiscent of a debate I had on Twitter today about a different topic, but it's interesting to me that I really don't believe that people understand what's happening behind the scenes, and that sometimes this kind of thing can be shocking to the average person, you know? Mm-hmm. It's true that Gmail is free. I mean, there are a lot of free email services. They're not unique in that regard. Is one of the people from This Week in Google running your IT department?
We are all big.
The Gmail man.
Yeah, yeah.
The Gmail man.
The
gave
Gmail
me this
man
Chrome
is
notebook,
running it.
And so now
I'll solve this problem.
I'll insult you all. No, I mean, I'm just trying to be reasonable. You're right. You can't prove the negative. You can't prove that. You know, the moon isn't green cheese on the other side, but, well, I guess you could prove
it. I really don't think this is that kind of argument, but, okay.
Well, I do. I mean, because what you're saying is I don't trust Google. So they could be doing anything.
I'm not saying that. No, we know that they are, in fact.
But they're doing the same thing that a spam filter does. They're looking at the mail and doing something.
But they're doing it to generate ads.
Okay. But you're getting a free service, so...
I guess what I'm saying is simply, you're okay with that. And actually, I'm okay with it.
Of course you are. I find it amusing.
Yep. So what I'm trying to say simply is that I think a lot of people wouldn't be okay with this and don't understand that this is what's happening.
Right.
And that it's not necessarily, you know, it's just because you're okay with it doesn't mean everyone else is okay with it.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the other part of it is the people who are probably the least okay with it are small business and enterprise users who they're assuming people aren't looking at their corporate mail. But if you're using Gmail as part of, then the question comes up, are they looking at it? And that's your corporate mail.
Right. Yep. I wonder if Google Docs, which you do pay for, not a lot, but you do pay for, I wonder if that has, does that have, that doesn't have ads in it. No.
Well,
Okay. So they're not scanning that. Do you think Google should do a better job of telling people what they're doing? Should they? Are they not communicating that effectively?
I think there's a reason why there's that cartoon of Eric Schmidt where he's kind of laughing.
Yeah, because Microsoft paid that company a lot of money to make that video.
Okay.
Well, they did.
All right.
That was made by a PR firm. That was heavily supported by Microsoft.
There's a reason that people don't trust Google, and it's because they're not transparent about this kind of thing.
I think they're very transparent. I think, though, that it is it does creep people out, and but I think Google's pretty transparent about it. I think they're very clear about it. There was a big brouhaha when this all happened, when Gmail came out. People said, oh, this is terrible. You think normal people, though, have no idea?
No, I don't think they understand.
What should Google do? What should Google do?
Right. I think they should not do what they're doing.
Oh, they shouldn't have contextual ads on Gmail.
I don't think they're effective because as that little funny video kind of points out, they by looking at words in a mail, they're not necessarily contextual. They're just based on random words in a mail. It doesn't mean that they're contextual.
Well, shouldn't that reassure you? That reassures you about Hotmail that it's not done well. Shouldn't that make you feel better about it?
No, because they're only going to get better. I mean, I think that they're going down a certain route here that I just think is a little iffy. That's all.
I guess my attitude is they should be clear about it so that people know what the deal is that they're making with Google when they sign up for Gmail.
Yeah.
By
the way, they do have a link. So if you go into Gmail and it at the bottom of the ads, it does say about these ads, and it goes to a page that explains what they're doing. And actually, that is perfectly acceptable.
Okay.
They do have a page on their site that explains this is what they do.
Right.
What they don't offer is a way to opt out of this. Right.
Yes, they do. You can buy Google Docs,
and that opts you out of ads.
Yeah. If you pay for it. So, I guess kind of my issue is that there are a lot of people who want free services and they get irate because there's ads. I think Google should be, here's my feeling, Google should be allowed to do Gmail. They should be allowed to do the ads exactly as they do it, provided they fully disclose and they say, in return for a free service, what we're going to do is our automated systems, just like the spam system looks for spam, our automated ad systems will go through the mail and look for appropriate ads. If you don't want this, please don't sign up for Google Mail, use a paid email service like Office 365.
So the problem is you can't actually pay not to have these ads. You can pay to get Google Docs, which is a custom domain. You can't take your existing Gmail account and not see ads.
But you could have a paid Gmail account that's not the same account, but you can have a paid account.
But not a Gmail account.
I wonder, I haven't signed up for Gmail in years. I wonder what they tell you when you sign up for a new Gmail account. Do they say, you're going to get
what they say on
they
their...
should be very clear at that point. They should say, you're signing up for a free mail system. The way this works is you're going to get ads. And we're going to get those ads contextually from what you put in the emails. It doesn't strike me that that's... If they're clear about that, it strikes me as a normal... thing.
Yeah. You do have to, you can go and look at it, and you can, in fact, it says, they call these things signals, right? Yeah. It does say that you can show more useful ads, which is the default, by using importance signals from across my messages. You can disable that. You can't disable ads, of course.
So I'm looking at my Gmail, and so this is it about these links. Is that what you're talking about? Does that explain the ads?
Yeah, so I got an email from someone at Twit, and it's funny, on the side, the ads are for such things as townhomes in Petaluma, New Zealand vacation, Tennessee hotels,
So they're not doing a great job, obviously.
No, it's crazy. Some of them are nuts. I mean...
I think this is... Look, they put a video in here. It says ad targeting in Gmail is fully automated. No humans read your email. This type of automated scanning is how many email services, not just email, do spam filtering and spell checking. Ads are selected for relevance by the ads. I mean, I think that this is pretty clear. If they're lying about it, then you're absolutely right. You should be irate. I don't see any evidence they're lying, but...
I'm not saying they're lying. I don't know what you mean by that.
Well... because you said earlier, well, we don't know what they're doing. Well, they say this is what they're doing.
No. I mean, in other words, we don't know how these things are generated. Yes, I know they're by a computer. My point was simply that Google engineered the software that does this. I mean, right. they know what they're doing. It's nice that it's anonymous, but I think there are some privacy issues with any automated process going through your email.
Well, then you shouldn't use Gmail. If that bugs you, you should use something else. I think you're right. And okay, I think, well,
let's use Hyper-V. Yeah. I want to use Hyper-V.
No, I just think that it's very easy to create innuendo about this. But what is the real issue? Is the real issue that Google's not transparent and straightforward about them doing this? I mean, I don't know. This looks pretty transparent. And if you make
I think it's
I was going to say, it's just a sales video, guys.
No, I know, but DePaul and I are getting in a larger argument. I agree. The sales video is a sales video. He said it's not FUD.
Yeah.
I think it's FUD.
No, I think what I'm saying is don't just dismiss it. You say, well, this is FUD, and then we can move on from there. Like, well, hold on a second. I mean, they're making a point, which I think is valid, which is simply that Google is parsing your email. And for a lot of people, that is an issue. And as a Microsoft partner who's selling Office 365, that is something.
It's a selling point. You're right. It's a selling point.
Go after. Absolutely. It's not just FUD. I mean, it is a legitimate concern that people will have. And, you know, like you said, if you don't want something parsing your email, don't use Gmail. Right. Well, now Microsoft is trying to sell you something that is an alternative to that. And that's a perfectly valid strategy.
And they make the promise in Office 365 that, is there spam filtering in Office 365?
Yeah.
Is there spell checking? Okay, in both those cases, they're scanning your emails.
I would imagine. But they're not using them to generate ads. That's the distinction I think they're trying to make.
Right. Okay.
It is a little weird. You know, if you're doing research for something and you see ads for things related to that show up.
That creeps people out. I understand that creeps people out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's move on. Avatar Connect. Bring your avatar to life. It's about time. So they showed this at CES. Are you using this?
This just takes something horrible and makes it more horrible.
What does it do? Actually getting your picture and making it an avatar?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, it is.
And then
speaking of things that creep people out.
Yes. I don't like it.
This is Uncanny Valley.
No. And then you have chats, avatars talking to avatars.
Well, we used to do that on Tech TV ages ago.
So actually, hey, let me throw something by you that you may appreciate because I've been kind of dumping on Google here. The one thing that Google really gets right in Google+ is that they force people to really be themselves. You can't just sign up and be some bozo miss.
That's very controversial, by the way.
It shouldn't be because one of the things that drives me nuts on Xbox Live is that these goons can have any name they want, and then I can't find out who they really are. So you exist as some sort of an anonymous somebody, and that's nuts. Why is someone who can hide their identity allowed to contact me over Xbox Live?
Right.
And then leave, by the way, in some cases, an insane, profanity-laced tirade in audio form.
Yeah, we all know the negative of the fact that people are anonymous online and do stuff
right.
Because
you see what I'm saying,
they
right?
Never do. I agree.
So, I have a big problem with that, and I feel like Microsoft should be doing more to prevent that kind of thing. You know, and there's weird examples on the Xbox Live side of where they kind of overreach with this stuff, and then where they kind of underreach with it. But without getting into too much detail, I would just say, one of the things I saw about Google+ that I actually firmly agree with is force people to be who they really are online. Because I think that will rein in some of the stupidity that people who are anonymous are allowed and more inclined to do.
So do you think that we could do the show like this with Connect avatars?
I absolutely think we could do the show like this.
So this is,
and I also think that we should never do that.
This is Major Nelson. talking to somebody. That's Major Nelson. I don't know how much that looks like Larry Heard.
Just like Major Nelson, who's like 200 years old.
But this is cool. So this, how is it capturing your movements? Is that how it's doing the gestures and the lip sync is done through the Kinect capturing your movements?
Yep.
Nothing creepy about this at all.
Right. I want to do this.
Eyebrows.
Maybe we'll make you instead of doing this set that we do and using video and stuff.
Yeah, we'll be avatars.
We could have saved so much money.
We could appear to be avatar. Sitting next to you as the avatar.
That would be so
there.
Cool.
Yes.
Do I have to be an avatar? I guess I would have to be too.
I don't know. I think you can mix and match.
Really?
Oh, can you? Oh, well.
Yeah, why not? Well, you could. I mean, you know.
We have the means.
This is like a...
We have the technology. Sure. And this works with an Xbox.
You Microsoft don't, just did... They just did a TV interview with CNBC and Craig Mundy on TV using the avatars.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was pretty weird and freaky.
And Craig was an avatar.
He was an avatar. And wow. So was Maria. What's her name?
Bartiromo?
Bartiromo.
Let me see. I know this is going to get us in trouble and probably get this video banned from YouTube, but let's just, in a news context... So we gotta watch their ad anyway. See CNBC, you're gonna get.
See,
an
this
act.
Is actually a legitimate use of this.
That's what I think. It's news
reporting.
Yep.
It's free. It's fair use. But the problem is, right. Google's YouTube uses the same automated technology as Gmail Man to find to find violations of copyright.
I bet it does. I bet it does.
No, it does. And so it's got an automatic copyright.
No human being ever watches the videos on YouTube.
Well, they can't. 35 hours of video every minute are uploaded now.
I know.
Okay, so this is Maria. That's not an avatar. Actually, no. I think Maria Bartiromo has always been an avatar.
No, that's surprisingly lifelike. For someone on CNBC, she's surprisingly lifelike.
Yeah, that's true. Come on. Let's get to the interview. Here okay.
Connecting the...
But it looks just like Craig.
Connecting
the dots. That's Craig. Connecting.
Maybe this is going to be how the Microsoft guys never appear to age.
See, that would be interesting. If you could make this technology be really lifelike, that would be neat. Wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
so they're showing
how it
works.
Using it in businesses, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Then you wouldn't have to put on clothes.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So is that Maria?
This is...
No. Choose your back.
Yeah,
okay, so now they're going to do
it. Yep, that's her.
I'm really freaked by this.
So she's... I just want to jump to the part where it's actually working. Maybe I can jump.
This, by the way, which is what everyone who's ever used a Kinect has experienced.
I
just want to jump to the part where I can actually play the game.
Hold on, here they are. Okay.
There we go.
Okay, let me turn the sound up.
Personally, that we're going to see applications in both domains. We decided to start this with Avatar Kinect because we knew two things.
So it takes
first,
everything
we
and makes it look kind of juvenile and
these
silly.
Oh, that's gaming, so weird. And entertainment environments. We also knew that this was shifted primarily to a younger audience.
Wow.
In fact, there's probably 200 million avatars of one form or another that people have already created
over
the years.
So if you're not watching on video, you get a Kinect avatar, and they're in a virtual studio, and they look very much, well, not very much. They look a little bit like the real thing, but they're gesticulating. It's the real voice. They're gesticulating in real time, and they're moving their mouth in fairly accurate lip sync. That's pretty amazing.
Oh boy!
Yep.
They
unleashed the Kraken.
That's wild. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Do you know what they told? I forget who they told this to, but they said the reason they are really investing in this for businesses in the future is because of the bandwidth issues. You know, like if you have a real-time video conference using webcams, you're using a lot more bandwidth, they say, than if you have two avatars chatting
in
real time.
What?
That's what they said. I'm just telling you what they said.
No, that makes sense.
Really?
That makes sense. So it's really about saving bandwidth.
That's what they said. Oh, you know, at the beginning, it's a fun thing for Xbox. But they're already looking at can we use this when we have Skype? How can we use this with Link? You know, which is their
that's what's interesting,
unified
isn't
communications
it?
Program.
That's what's interesting,
yep.
isn't it? Yeah.
They're doing that, Paul. Believe it or not.
No, I believe it. That's why I'm groaning. I'm just this is so wrong.
It does seem like the wrong direction.
I hate the internet.
Isn't the reason that we use Skype and technologies like video so that I can look at the real Paul and I feel like he's in here? And
if I
make it an avatar, then it kind of distances it once again.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, long, long time ago, I think it was the IE3 very early betas, there was an avatar-based virtual space where you could go and chat with people. And you could bounce around in this 3D environment.
Yeah.
And it was very, it was, you know, obviously
like
low res,
life,
and it was very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember what it was called.
We used that on Tech TV.
But there
TV.
Was a wind that would blow. Like it was a weird environment. It was like an outdoor environment, mm-hmm. and you could hear the wind, and it was kind of...
Virtual Places. That's the one we used on Tech TV. It was called Virtual Places. It was okay. an avatar-based
This is like
chat.
A return of this. I mean, but we did that stuff back
that
then.
That was 1998.
On a dial-up connection.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's what Mary Jo's saying is it's less bandwidth constrained because you don't have to all that you don't have to all the details around you. I could just have your hand movement send that very quickly along. A couple of real quick stories before we get to our picks and tips of the week. We actually meant to mention this on MacBreak Weekly and I forgot. Amazon, Wall Street Journal, a lot of publishers changed their apps over this week so that you could not, for instance, on the Kindle app, buy books within the Kindle app on the iOS. On iPhone and iPad, because they don't want to give 30% to Apple.
Yeah. On the good news front, the Kindle is finally moving towards allowing periodical subscriptions on bigger form devices than they sell, like the iPad. But the problem is not all of them are available. So, for example, you could read the Washington Post through the Kindle app on an iPad today, but you can't do it with the Wall Street Journal. Actually, I'm not sure about the Wall Street Journal. You can't do it with the New York Times.
It's really a step backwards because that was one of the great things about in-app purchases was I could buy stuff without exiting my Kindle app. I could buy a book. Now I have to go back to the web, buy the book.
Yeah.
And then
now, obviously, if you have a Kindle device or if you have a Kindle app on a different platform, it still works.
Right.
But this is only on iOS.
Thank you, Apple.
Yeah, it stinks.
You dick.
Yeah, I mean, it requires you to know. I mean, there's a website you can go to buy Kindle books from an iOS device, but you have to know what that URL is. You can't.
Oh, they don't put a button anymore because they used to put a button. I should check on
no,
my
it's
Kindle.
Gone. That's the
that
point.
Button's gone too because it used to would exit you out and go put you in Safari. So they don't even want to do that because Apple would say no, you're bypassing.
Well, that's what's gone, right? That's what they've removed. Yeah, yeah. And if they were to allow you to purchase the books from within the Kindle app, Apple, of course, would get a cut. And the argument is that, you know,
30%.
The margin's
no
so
margin.
Low on right. these things that they would just lose money.
Oh, you're right. I'm looking at the Kindle app on my iPad. There's no longer any buy a book at all.
But, you know, now they have that Apple UI that gets out of your way thing going for them, you know. So maybe it's a design consideration. Right?
Wall Street Journal changed their app, too, because you used to be able to buy issues, individual issues and so forth. They didn't want to give 30%. To Apple. And finally, Mozilla announces that they're going to do a mobile operating system. Woohoo!
Yay!
It's called Boot to Gecko.
I call it Boot to Irrelevance.
Why?
I sort of get why they're doing it, but I also think that...
Is this their response to Chrome OS?
We already have it. Yeah, we have it with Chrome. Nobody was looking for this.
You know? I don't even like Chrome OS. I've got this Chromebook. Yeah. I brought the Samsung Chromebook in, and it's a netbook that only has a browser.
Yeah, it's a browser surrounded by hardware.
I don't get it.
It's okay.
Right.
It's fine.
It's okay.
If that's all you want.
Yeah.
But it's heavier.
Well, but they're also talking about it as a mobile phone operating system, too. When you go into the thread on this, it's like, hey, we want to compete with iOS. We want to compete with Windows Phone OS. They even called out Windows Phone OS, believe it or not. I don't think they mentioned a version number there.
Yeah.
But
well, despite the fact that they won't release an app on Windows Phone, by the way.
Right.
No, there's no Mozilla.
Again, but
no
again,
Firefox.
The thing.
No, and they've explicitly said we're not doing it.
Right. Boot to Gecko is going to use Android at its core, supposedly, at least parts of the kernel and the drivers.
Well,
so aren't they going to be in the same legal hot water as everybody else?
It really is Chrome OS, isn't it? Wow.
Yep.
We're going to take a break. Come back. Paul Thurrott has his app picks and his tips of the week. And how are we going to do this going forward? You want to make Mary Jo do something in this last segment?
I do want to make her do something. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I want to.
Mary Jo, could you do a little dance? No,
I think we got.
I could do app picks. I have a Windows Phone 7. I could do some phone picks.
So Paul's going to do a Windows Weekly Tip of the Week, a Windows 7 app pick, a Windows Phone 7 app pick, a mobile app pick 1, a mobile app pick 2. He's taken all the air out of the room for you, Mary Jo.
Do you want? Yes.
Do you want to do an enterprise pick of the week?
Jeez.
Yeah, I do.
All right.
That would be fun.
Coming up, Mary Jo's enterprise pick of the week. That is exciting. Excitement plus.
What the hell has happened here?
You've lost control, Paul. The master
control. Spiraling. What happened?
The master control unit is now in charge. Our MMC snap-in of the week coming up in just a moment. But first...
yeah, exactly.
That's from the chat room. Thank you, guys. First, visit to netflix.com/twit. You know about Netflix. Of course, we've talked about Netflix for many years. I hope you're using Netflix streaming. I think some people were a little concerned about the Netflix price increase. No big deal, because $7.99 is still the best deal in entertainment if you just get the streaming. Forget the DVDs. I'm sure Netflix doesn't want me to say this, but forget the DVDs. Try the streaming, because, you know, okay, yeah, you know, some movies and TV shows are only available on DVD, but there's so much, thousands in here, tens of thousands of titles, there's so much in here. Every night I find something great, and a lot of times stuff I hadn't even thought of to watch. Great movies, great TV shows. I was watching Battlestar Galactica last night. I love that. OSS 117, that was the movie that Paul recommended. You know, my daughter loves French, so we watched that. She loved it. It was hysterical with Jean Dujardin as a French
awesome.
007. Oh, what a great movie. Lost in Rio. Well, you said, actually, we watched the other one.
Well,
which
it's the first one's the better one.
The Cairo,
the
one?
Cairo one?
Yeah, that's the one we watched. Yeah. Yep. Just all of this great stuff. Classics, brand new stuff, and more. And it's $7.99 a month. I mean, you can't beat that deal. But I got a better deal for you. 30 days free. If you go to netflix.com/twit. Now, if you're already a Netflix member and you already know about this, fine. But do me a favor. Help Paul out. Help Mary Jo out. Help me out. Tell your friends. Tell grandma. Tell people who, you know, just shout it out from the highest rooftop. netflix.com/twit. It's free for 30 days. Tell the world. And we will thank you for it. netflix.com/twit. It is the single best deal in home entertainment that's out there. You could watch it on your iPad, your iPhone. They don't have it yet on Windows Phone, but, or do they? Android?
They do.
They do. It's on Windows Phone.
They do.
They do.
Yep.
Of course, Roku Box, Xbox 360, you know, a lot of devices, Blu-ray players now, a lot of TVs, all have Netflix. It's the gold standard of streaming. All right, Paul Theroux.
You know, there's a new generation of Roku Boxes that
just came out. Have you got one yet?
I have one coming on the way. I don't have it yet.
Good. Next week, we'll get our review, because I'm very curious myself. They've added Angry Birds.
I know.
With the special controller.
Cool. I'm not that excited about that, but I'm curious if these boxes will support closed captioning, because Netflix has actually added closed captioning to a lot of content.
They should. They really should.
I don't have anything that has it yet, although I guess it's available, you know, here or there.
Let us get our Windows Weekly Tip of the Week, Mr. Paul Theroux.
So I wrote an article this week about consolidating email accounts. I think, like a lot of people listening to this, I have way too many email accounts.
Yes.
In fact, I have 11 or more.
Wow.
11 I could think of. That's too many.
Do they all go to one inbox? Or
no, but that's the thing. So the article is about the different ways you can consolidate email accounts. And you can do it up in the cloud by pulling an email into a central location. If you happen to use an application instead of the cloud, you can do it from like Outlook or Windows Live Mail or whatever, or on a phone-based application as well. So the new version of Windows Phone, Mango, has a unified inbox view. You can bring different mailboxes all into the same application, which is kind of nice. But one of the things that, you know, I did not write about, and I think I might write about in the future, is this week's tip, which is simply this, that depending on how you read your email, you can consolidate in different ways. And actually, even though I feel like using these web interfaces is better in some ways, the one advantage to using an application in Windows, an email application, is that they have this notion of unread mail that goes across all of your accounts. And that's actually really handy. So even if you're not consolidating these things up in the cloud, if you bring all of the email into one location, whether it's Microsoft Outlook or Windows Live Mail, one of the views you get is just unread mail. And you can you could just have it open to this sort of virtual folder, and you can just see a list of all your unread mail, no matter which account it's coming from. And that's actually kind of a nifty way to do it.
Yeah.
So
cool.
It's I guess what I'm saying is that whether you're talking about Windows or Windows Phone coming with Mango, you do have this capability, and that's maybe one way of, instead of doing the work to consolidate them behind the scenes, you could just use a single client and access them all from the same place.
Very cool. Very neat. You know, Mary Jo, we'll save your enterprise. I know. I want. It's such a great thing. I want to save it to the last bit so that it's like makes people stay tuned. Okay.
Wow.
I'm ready.
Crap.
Paul's Windows 7 app pick of the week.
I see what's happening here. So Microsoft released an add-on for Windows Photo Gallery this week that adds support for the RAW, various RAW camera formats. And interestingly, it's not just for the Photo Gallery app. When you install this, it also adds RAW support directly to Windows, meaning that when you view RAW photo files in Windows Explorer, they'll now come up with previews like normal, like JPEG photos or, you know, PNG files or whatever. I do not actually own a camera that supports a RAW file format, and at least I don't think I do, but I do know just from reading about it and talking to people about it that, you know, one of the confusing bits about RAW is that they're, you know, those files are kind of hard to work with in the file system and generally haven't worked very well in these low-end, you know, photo editors or photo management suites, but now this adds that capability.
And anybody who's serious about photography is going to use RAW these days, so that's a great great thing. Good. And it's just a plugin. It's a codec pack that you download, basically.
Yeah. They've had little things like this in the past. I guess this is a better version. It works with a 64-bit version of Windows 7, which I guess the other one did not.
Right.
So just a nicer way of doing it, I guess.
And now, for those of you who are Windows Phone developers.
Well, but here's the deal. Microsoft released a release candidate version of Windows Phone 7.5.
Mango.
To developers, which is the Mango version.
The
version
very,
very close
known
to the
Mango.
Final version.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you wanted to get this early, you could pay $100 and become part of the developer program, and you would gain access to this. It's available to anyone who's in the developer program. So I haven't looked into this, but I know the Chevron guys have a developer unlock tool that only costs $9. And that should be enough, other than that you'd have to find these files on your own, because the problem with the official Microsoft stuff is that it is through their Connect site, you know, connect.microsoft.com. So you would need to have access to that. I know you get that through the official channels, but I don't think you would get that through Chevron. And actually Raphael is writing me right now, so what he's saying is it's not available yet through Chevron, but they're working on it. So this may in fact be cheaper soon. But anyway, the point is simply that I've updated all of my phones now with Windows Phone 7.5 release candidate, and the process is a little time-consuming, but if you want to get that next version of the OS early, because God knows how long it's going to be before people with existing phones are going to be able to have it, this is a way to do that.
Very good news for people like me who happen to still use Macintoshes sometimes. You taught me that...
Loser. I'm sorry. What?
You taught me that live mesh. You taught me the live mesh works on Macs, which surprised me. And I get 5 gigs free.
Yes. The problem was when Lion came out, Lion broke compatibility with the existing version.
Not anymore.
Live mesh. Yeah. So the two mobile picks maybe isn't the greatest. These are sort of like cross-platform picks, but these are two Microsoft Cloud products picks. That work on Apple hardware. So the first one is a new version of Live Mesh from Mac OS X, which now does work in Lion. It's only the photo synchronization stuff. It's not remote desktop. That's one of the features you get on the Windows side. But
this is a little frustrating. I did click the link that said if you're on a Mac, download here, and it says we're sorry, we can't find that page.
Nice. Okay, it is there. I'm using it. I do synchronize several folders between various PCs, and now you can synchronize them to a Mac as well. So it does work if you can find it.
There's a page in the search results, but it just won't come up. So maybe it's just down right now. That's probably all it is. It's just down. Temporarily.
Okay.
Temporarily.
Sorry about that. The other one is Microsoft also updated OneNote Mobile for iPhone. There's no iPad version of OneNote, which is too bad, but there is a new version now of...
This is great. I can't wait to use this.
Yeah, this app.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, you know, as with Live Mesh, I mean, depending on where you're at in life, I mean, a lot of Mac users obviously use Dropbox, and then on... On the note-taking side, I think a lot of iOS users are probably fans of Evernote or whatever. But
this looks more and more like Evernote, which is kind of funny because Evernote was written to compete with OneNote, and now OneNote is kind of caught up in some ways.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter said, "Oh, you know, OneNote looks like a response to Evernote," you know, and it's like, well, actually, OneNote predates Evernote by several years. But okay,
Evernote was definitely written to kind of take off on OneNote's success. It was.
Well, OneNote has always been very Microsoft specific,
right?
So there's no version of OneNote, I don't believe, still for the Mac, but now here we have one for iOS.
This is great.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do one for the iPad, and hopefully we'll see more of the Microsoft Office stuff on iOS as well in the future.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you've waited for it, you've pondered, you've pined, you've demanded, and Mary Jo Foley will now give us her enterprise pick of the week.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Boy, that's galvanic. That is...
It was on my end. I periodically lose my internet connection.
Oh, that's not good.
Yes.
Well, here's some good news. Here's some good news. It's time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Well, actually, did she miss all my picks and tips? Maybe I should just do them all over again.
Oh, Paul, shut up.
No. I heard almost all of them, actually.
Oh, good.
I was so excited to get to do a pick of the week that at first I was thinking, oh, can I do two?
Yes.
But
save one for next week.
Okay. So.
But you can do two.
I'll
you can do your choice. It's up to you.
Okay. Well, I was going to do around Windows Phone Mango. I was going to talk about how now with the Mango release, you're going to be able to have private and beta marketplace support on Mango, which is really interesting to enterprise users because a lot of them want to have apps that are just internally focused, internally used, or just test an app inside their own company, and they don't necessarily want it broadcast out to everyone. So this is a capability that's being introduced with Mango. It's not the ultimate private and beta marketplace that everybody was hoping it was going to be, but it's a good start and at least shows Microsoft's thinking a little bit about the enterprise with Mango.
There you go.
But my real enterprise tip of the week, my real enterprise tip of the week is System Center.
Oh, God.
Believe it or not. But listen, wait, don't sleep under your desk, Leo.
I'm wide awake.
You like this
I'm
pick.
So excited.
Okay. System Center Configuration Manager 2012. And why am I picking this product? It didn't come out into a new beta this week or anything. In fact, the last beta release of it was in May. But I'm thinking you guys probably didn't talk about it on this show. And why is it interesting? Because
because it helps IT empower people to use devices and applications. They need to be productive while maintaining corporate compliance and control.
But this release is coming later this year, is going to support iPad.
Oh.
It's going to support iOS phones. It's going to support Symbian phones. So finally, Microsoft is going to be able to manage devices other than Windows Mobile with System Center Configuration.
That's actually huge.
So it's going to be pretty cool.
Nowadays in the enterprise, it used to be you could dictate a phone. And that's what the company phone was, and they were mostly BlackBerries, and you have management tools for that. But now people bring their own phones. They get to choose. They want iPhones. I think that's huge. I think that's great. How did they
it
do
this? So
is it a joint?
It's coming out later this year.
Is it a joint partnership with Apple?
It's Exchange ActiveSync.
No.
I got it. That's great.
Yep. But very interesting that Microsoft finally is supporting
I was awake during the reviewers workshop. I heard about this.
You were.
He just thought better about bringing it.
See, who says System Center can be fun, guys?
Yes.
It can be.
Yes. Mary Jo Foley, she's the greatest. All about Microsoft.com, her great ZDNet blog. We welcome her to the Windows Weekly podcast. It's official now. She's going to have to come back every week. And
yes.
Paul finally can go on vacation. Thank you. It's great to have you, Mary Jo. It really is. Paul Thorotti is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, Windows IT Pro news editor, Penton Media Analyst, and, of course, the author of many great books, including Windows Phone Secrets and the soon-to-come Windows 8 Secrets. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us and putting up with some of the glitches we're having in the new studio. But I think overall the new look is great, and the chance to have you guys sitting around the round table is kind of fun. So thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We'll see you all next week.